We're going fishing today on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry, and we have a panel of guests joining us. 3 weeks into angling season across Wisconsin, we want to find out how our lakes, streams, and fish are doing, along with your questions along the way. If you've got something to say about your favorite watering hole, questions about fish you are struggling to find, we'd like to have you join us at any time by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Our guests, all from our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources today. Max Wolter is here, DNR fisheries biologist for Sawyer County based in Hayward. Focuses management of local fisheries, including the Chippewa flowage and Namekagon River. He serves on the DNR's walleye and bass teams as well. Max, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Paul Cunningham is a fisheries ecologist for the DNR in Madison. He's concerned with the acquisition and stewardship of state properties and the management of habitat, particularly around shallow lakes. He's also co-leaded the DNR's Northern Pike team. Paul, welcome.
Happy to be here, Lee.
And Alex Latska is a Madison-based fishery systems biologist with the Wisconsin DNR. He coordinates research and monitoring of muskie, walleye, trout, and panfish. Alex, welcome to you.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm going to start with you, Alex, because May 3rd was the start of our angling season. The inland fishery season opened across Wisconsin. Wondering what you've heard so far from anglers and their success out there.
Yeah, sure. For me, fishing started off pretty good. Had a few good trout outings. But I'm not out on the landscape too much. I sit behind a desk in Madison most of the time. So I'll hand it to Max.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Max, you've been out there.
Yeah, I that's part of my job is to be out there to do fish surveys. So basically from the moment the ice goes off the lakes all the way through early summer, we're out there every day. Spring is an important time for Wisconsin fish. That's when most of the spawning is happening, which is, you know, the special fish word for the birds and the bees. So they're out there. That's kind of their one big chance to get it done. So that's when we're doing a lot of our surveys. Northern pike spawn first, then walleye, then we start to get into some crappies and muskies. So where we're at right now, many of these species are done spawning, which means they're ready to eat. And we're ready to eat them if you're out there fishing. There are some species like panfish that are still kind of going through their spawning activities right now, and that can actually be a really good time to target them because everything's up shallow. So this time of year is really a fun time to be out fishing.
It's the time to get out there and go fishing. What do you need to know before you go in terms of licensing and making sure that you're clear to fish?
Yeah, great question. So you got to have a fishing license unless you're under 16. Kids under 16 fish for free. We also have free fishing weekend coming up June 7th and 8th when anybody in Wisconsin can try out fishing without needing a license. So that's an exciting time to, you know, give it a chance.
What's the value of that license and what does it mean to the fisheries across Wisconsin? Paul?
Our fisheries program is mostly supported by our license dollars. So we don't receive a lot of general program revenue in the state fisheries program. So our revenue is sport fish restoration funds. So the taxes our users pay on tackle and boats and fuel, boat fuel, and then our license fee structure. And so that's the bulk of our budget, really, that comes to the fisheries program, other than our stamps, our salmon stamp and our inland trout stamp. So that is the power that enables our 200 and some staff to do their jobs.
So the more licensing we have, the more our DNR fisheries can do.
Yes, yes.
And so that just makes sense. And out of state, in state, those levels are a little different. I also saw, like, if you're 98 or over, fishing is also unlicensed. Is that right? I think I saw if you're born
you're
after
stumping us, Lee. I don't know.
I didn't mean to do DNR trivia today.
It
sounds
like
your website yesterday. It was like people born before 1928 can fish without a license. And I was like, well, yeah, I would imagine we'd grandfather them in.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Makes sense.
But they're still out there doing it. Great.
Absolutely.
We love that.
We invite them. So again, the license-free weekend is June 7th and 8th
across the state
of Wisconsin. Otherwise, you should pick up a license because it goes to benefit our fisheries across the state and making sure there's fish for everybody when they find it. Getting your calls in at 1-800-642-1234, and let's start with some of your questions. We'll begin with Gary in Madison. Gary, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I had a question, and I don't know if you know the answer, but I'll ask anyways. I was wanting to know what what the recommendations are for consuming fish out of Lake Mendota and Monona and Wabisa on a regular basis. Because I've heard that there's quite a bit of mercury in the water, and is there some type of standardized, okay, this is safe?
Gary, I appreciate the question. I see a lot of pan fishing happening on the shores of Lake Monona on my way to and from work, and I also see some signs there at the Monona Terrace that advise against eating some of those fish. Alex, what can you tell us about some of the heavy metals that are being found there and the safety of those fish?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Gary. The two categories of contaminants we have in a lot of lake streams and across Wisconsin and in the Great Lakes are heavy metals, your mercury and PCBs, and then the newer forever chemicals, all the PFAS compounds. So we do have a small contaminants program where we collect fish tissue and monitor it for all of those contaminants, measure the concentrations, and then relate those to what's actually safe to eat depending on your age and sex. So I don't know the contaminant advisories for the Madison Lakes offhand. There are a few resources you can look to. A lot of those signs that Dane County and the city put out will specify what the recommendations are. The DNR publishes a booklet called Choose Wisely that documents all of these contaminant safe eating recommendations basically across the state. And then later we'll talk about a tool that we put out online called the Wisconsin Fishing Finder. Yeah. Which is a map, basically, where you can filter, add all sorts of data, and view a bunch of different things for any given lake, and that includes a layer for contaminant advisories and what's safe to eat.
You mentioned PFAS, and those appear to be in just about everything right now, these forever chemicals. How is the DNR looking at these forever chemicals and what they are doing to our ecosystems and fish?
Yeah, so our role in fisheries is mostly looking at the fish tissue content, how much PFAS is making it into fish tissues, and we're looking all across the state. A whole bunch of different water bodies will collect tissues and send them into the state lab to measure the concentrations. So we're looking in areas where it's already been found in surface water or other potential endpoints. And then where we find it at concentrations that are concerning, we'll issue a safe consumption advisory.
And what those consumption advisories look like for folks that aren't familiar is, you know, you go to the booklet and it'll show the water bodies where there may be elevated levels of something. And it'll say, you know, it is safe to eat this amount of fish this often, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not saying, typically, it's not saying, you know, you can't eat any fish. It's just saying don't eat more than this or more often than this.
Yeah, and to Gary's specific question on the hair chain of lakes, as I recall from our conversations with our fish toxicologist, it's the effluent from Truax Field, et cetera. Lake Mendota sits in the head of the watershed, and it's fairly clear of PFAS concentrations.
Okay.
But downstream on Monona, Wabisa, Kiganza, those have advisories for PFAS. And I think, Alex, I think it's a meal a month for bluegills and perch.
Okay.
It's a new advisory, so don't quote me. Check the Choose Wisely pamphlet, and we keep that up to date and current because, in general, we want people to eat fish.
Right.
But we also want them to eat safely.
Is that on the DNR website?
Yeah, Choose Wisely is. Yes.
We'll get a link.
And
up.
It's all in our fishing finder that Alex will talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
We're going to get to that as well. But Gary, appreciate the call. We'll go to Ellen in La Crosse next. Ellen, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a cabin on a small lake in central Wisconsin. And about 2 weeks ago when we were there, we found at least 6 or 8 largemouth bass dead on the shoreline. Talked to other neighbors. I think one other neighbor had found one. They were only largemouth bass, and they were really big, like maybe 12 to 16 inches long. Mm. I've never even caught a bass that big on that lake. But they were big fish, not all of them that big, but they were big fish and dead. And just wondering, and I haven't seen any since. We were there this past weekend, nothing.
Okay.
Is that, does that amount to a fish kill, or is that just a something that happened random, or what could that be?
Ellen, I appreciate the question. Max Walter, you want to handle this?
Yeah, I'll start with this. So, you know, I mentioned earlier spawning is happening this time of year. It's also a time of year when fish are under a lot of stress. And so we do see fish dying from a variety of different diseases, parasites, things like that this time of year. The other thing that happened in the state over the last couple of weeks is a huge swing in temperatures, right? We were very hot.
Yeah.
Then the temperature crashed. The water temperature dropped about 20 degrees in my part of the state, and now it's coming back up. That's pretty hard on fish, too. They're a cold-blooded animal. So, you know, imagine how you feel when you have that fever and your body temperature changes just a couple degrees.
Yeah.
Now, imagine a fish, their body temperature's changing about 20 degrees. So when you have that on top of some of these other bacterial infections and things that can happen this time of year, we do see some fish kills. We're seeing some in my part of the state. Typically, it only accounts for a pretty small percentage of the population. Most of the fish are going to get through that event. The caller, Ellen, interesting to hear that it's largemouth bass. I might throw it to Paul in a second. We're seeing a lot of panfish that'll have those kind of minor fish kills in the north. So the largemouth bass thing may be something a little bit different.
So
not just largemouth bass, but the biggest that Ellen's seen, or bigger than anything she's ever caught.
Big bass.
Big largemouth.
Well, she only catches big bass. So, Ellen, we'd encourage you to send any photos you have to the local fish biologist. We often will follow up when we get these fish kill reports, and it could be the tip of the iceberg, and it could be a very isolated thing. Can't make a diagnosis on over the phone on radio, but largemouth bass virus could be one of the concerns. And a photo evidence, we would then, our biologists would consult with our fish health veterinarians. We have two in the program, and they would advise as well. And if needed, we would do a follow-up survey work if it was significant and assess that kill. So we have a fish kill investigations process as well. Is so for Ellen, if she gives us the name of the water body, we'll share it with our biologists after the show, or she's welcome to contact, was it Adams County?
She said Central Wisconsin.
Central Wisconsin, okay.
Somewhere.
Yeah, send it to the DNR, Ellen, and I have a few photos, and while this might not help in a diagnosis, it may begin an investigation that the DNR will follow through on.
Yes.
Sounds good. That's Paul Cunningham, fisheries ecologist for our DNR. Also joining us, Alex Latska, Madison-based fishery systems biologist with our DNR, and Max Walter, DNR fisheries biologist for Sawyer County, answering your questions as we are going fishing today on the Larry Mueller Show. Have a line open for you now at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry, and you're listening to the Larry Mueller Show. Angling season underway across Wisconsin, and we're going fishing on the Larry Mueller Show with our roundtable of experts, Alex Latska from the DNR, Paul Cunningham from our DNR, and Max Walter from our DNR, answering your fishery questions at 1-800-642-1234 or talk@wpr.org. I'm curious, Alex, how much of a pastime is fishing in Wisconsin? I've seen some numbers that it's as many as one-third of Wisconsinites are fishers.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I'm not sure on the one-third. I'd say that sounds about right, but we sell about 1 million licenses a year for mostly in-state residents. Most of our licenses are sold to our in-state residents. It's part of the culture, right? It's the it's the tradition. So
My story about fishing is that I've never caught anything, but it's always been me and my dad out on a boat, and the only thing catching we do is catching up, and it's the best. It's the best. Like, I really appreciate that time. I value it. I remember in Montello one time we took my dad's brother's boat out. The motor gave out. We ended up stuck on the wrong side of the lake, and it was one of the best days fishing I've ever had, and didn't catch a thing. That, to me, is like what it means to go fishing.
That's right. And I wouldn't say that is an uncommon perspective.
Yeah.
The most common angler, the most common thing that they're looking for when they go fishing is family time, the experience, the scenery, the aesthetics, all these things that go along with fishing. And a lot of people like to catch fish, but a lot of people are just happy to be out fishing.
author and Wisconsin legend Jerry Apps was with Larry Mueller a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about the same thing, that fishing is something passed down in tradition, and having to see his children and his children's children all with a line in the water hanging out and slowing life down a little bit means a whole lot. But I'm going to go back to you on this, Alex. What does this mean for the pressure it puts on our state fisheries?
Yeah. Fisheries management, if you go through school, you get a fisheries management degree, you think, oh, I'm going to spend my career working on fish.
Yep.
I can understand everything about fish biology and spend my time in the water. And then you get to do the job. And there's some of that, but most of fisheries management is people management. Some of the biggest drivers of fish populations are how the people are interacting with them. How much fishing are they doing? How much harvest is occurring? And then how should we respond as managers? How do we kind of control, how do we regulate the system to produce outcomes that are ultimately desirable? How do people find the fishing that they want when there are these pressures? So it's all a balance. It's trying to make sure that people can harvest fish in a sustainable way. People can catch desirable size fish, trophy fish in some spots, or have these days where you want to take the kids out and just hammer bluegill or something. So try to have a mix of all these different experiences, try to balance all those different objectives.
Fish biology, it's easy to not easy to understand, but it's understandable. Human behavior, well, that's another question
much
entirely.
Yeah, and I'll build on what Alex said. You can't have good fishing unless you have good fish habitat.
Nice.
And in fisheries, we may not always directly manage the habitat. It's not within all of our authority, but it's an important element of the department does in terms of regulating water law policy and what folks can do in the waters of the state, whether it's CAFOs, combined animal feeding operations, to land use, to riparian residential ownership along a lakeshore or stream. Those things all matter, and cumulatively they can make for great fisheries or they can make for poor fisheries as well.
Well, you can apply that to humans, right? The habitat habitat around us, it can in many ways dictate our quality of life.
Right, and that holds for fish too. And you know, we enjoy the benefits of many of our Wisconsin residents are great stewards, and they understand this. So working with our publics is often a pleasurable task.
Let's go back to your questions now for our panel of experts on fishing across Wisconsin, all from the DNR. Mike and Madison, we'll turn to you next. Good morning.
Hi. I've been perch fishing the Madison Lakes for close to 50 years, and a buddy of mine and I have noticed the last couple of years that it's just about non-existent. We've been fishing, concentrating on Mendota simply because of the FAFSAs. And they're not there. They're not there in the summertime. They're not there hard water fishing through the ice. We'll go out if we catch two or three perch, that's a good day, you know, and that just is unusual. Up until about 2 years ago, we go out and get 8, 10, 12 fish and go home happy with a meal. And it's not just us that, I mean, it's not just our poor fishing. I noticed that a local bait store here, DNS, has a fishing hotline, and they're scratching their heads about where the perch are and what's going on, too. I wonder if you guys could comment on that.
Mike, appreciate the question. Alex Latska, you're Madison-based fishery systems biologist, and you coordinate research and monitoring, among other fish, the panfish, which would include the perch in this question. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Mike. So perch are, they've got a couple things that may be affecting what you're seeing right now. So perch, much like crappie, tend to go through ups and downs in their population cycles. And they can be fairly dramatic, where in 1 year, you can have, you know, a lot of eggs hatch, a lot of young fish survive, and that year class will kind of perpetuate through time. So they grow up to be adults, and people are just catching that 1 year's worth of fish that came from whatever it was, 2018. So you do see these kind of natural cycles. That's one thing that may or may not be what's going on in Mendota. Perch are also a cool water fish. They're closely related to walleye, and a lot of our cool water fish have struggled as places have gotten warmer. Certainly walleye, perch to a lesser extent, so that there could be a habitat component of that as well. The third is always harvest, and panfish fisheries in particular are very harvest driven. Usually if people catch a 7-inch bluegill or an 8-inch perch, they're probably going to keep it and use it for their Friday fish fry. So with harvest in the Madison chain and the perch in Mendota in particular, we instituted a 10-bag panfish regulation a couple years ago now that was kind of responding to this perch situation in part. So it'll take a couple more years to kind of figure out if that has any benefit. But the idea was, okay, the population is lower than it used to be. If there is a harvest limitation from all the fishing that occurs, can we spread that out a little bit more? Can we keep those perch around a little bit longer?
What are some of the other fish that we're seeing that are struggling with warmer waters across Wisconsin?
I'd say in lakes, walleye are the key one that we can talk about. And I wouldn't want to ignore trout in our cold water trout streams.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, fish are cold-blooded species, right? Mm-hmm. So they're highly susceptible to even small changes in water temperature. And what we are seeing across large parts of the state and other states, you know, when we're talking to our counterparts in Minnesota and Michigan and even Ontario, walleye populations are not as robust as they used to be. Walleye are more sensitive species. They spawn in a very specific way. A lot of things have to go right to make more walleye. And what we're seeing is the effects of climate change, disruptions in the environment, disruptions in the habitat are throwing walleye off their game. So we're having less walleye in a lot of places that used to support them. River populations tend to be doing better than lake populations as a general trend. But that's certainly something that we're really focused on, because walleye are a prestige species, right?
Right.
Everybody wants them. Everybody wants to have a chance to catch a walleye in Wisconsin. So we've put a lot of research into that to try to understand that. Trying to understand what sorts of things we can do as fish biologists to try to help walleye. That includes things like stocking and habitat work. But, you know, the difference between walleye and something like a largemouth bass, which we'd call as more of a generalist, is that sensitivity. Largemouth bass, they can spawn anywhere. you could dig a hole in your backyard, fill it with water, and a largemouth bass is going to think that's pretty cool habitat. So we are seeing, you know, largemouth bass and some other panfish species doing quite well, even as walleye are declining regionally.
So Alex talked a little bit about the perch population. That was Max Walter there, fisheries biologist for Sawyer County, talking about the walleye population. Paul, I want to ask you about our brook trout and their sensitivity to our water temperatures.
Sure. The other thing that the perch face that we forgot to talk about was invasive species. So there are a lot of food web effects going on that affect species like yellow perch. So we've lost our yellow perch fish fry in Lake Michigan, pretty much. And that's because of the benthification of the energy flows in the pathways. So with zebra mussels and quaggas, all that energy is tied up into the bottom. And when those larval perch are out there drifting, they're on a starvation diet. There's no zooplankton, no small critters for them to eat up in that upper surface. So these large-scale invasions of non-native species, aquatic species, can also affect the food webs for these fishes. And there are interspecific competition or problems even in the trout world. So we have non-native brown trout, which are a very popular fishery, that impact our native brook trout. So brook trout are our only native stream fish in the state. And then we've got the lake trout. And so they're in a unique position as our locally adapted trout species. And they're the what we call a stenotherm, a cold water fish. And they're one of our ambassadors to the health of our cold water streams. And with our ever-increasing high levels of atmospheric CO2, human-caused, is raising our water temperatures of our streams as well as air temperatures and altering the flows. We've seen these dramatic, you know, high flow events and huge storms and then drought.
Yep.
And so all this is affecting our brook trout populations. And our modeling estimates project that we'll lose 2/3 of our brook trout habitat by the mid-century, by roughly around 2050 to 2065. So I that's a lot of habitat loss.
There
is
a brook trout reserves that is part of the DNR's fisheries program.
Yeah, once we saw the impacts of climate change on our brook trout, it was so sobering, we needed to do something. So Alex and our other staff, we sat down with a team of folks to try and identify the best of the best, these strongholds where we thought brook trout were worthy of securing their protection, their habitat, and we could hold the course, really, and keep these fish on our landscape, because they are arguably the most beautiful fish, Lee, that you've ever seen.
There are some native tribes that will not eat that fish because it is considered sacred.
Yes. And so these 54 places we call brook trout reserves are the best of the best. Some of them are still at threat. It's not like they aren't in need of management. Some of them need some rehabilitation work, some just protection and vigilance from already good land use practices. So we're working on these 54 places to try with our partners. There's a lot of folks that are interested in cold water conservation, and we're trying to partner up with them, U.S. Forest Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, and others. And, of course, I can't go without mentioning Trout Unlimited. An important conservation partner for us and the land trust to protect these places. So
that's Paul Cunningham, fisheries ecologist with our DNR, along with Alex Latska and Max Wolter, who are our guests for our fishing roundtable today, along with your input along the way at 800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. We'll go to Jonah in Greenville next. Jonah, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I was wondering what we can do as Wisconsinites, like just on a state level, if federal protections go away for our endangered or threatened fish.
Thank you, Jonah. I keep going back to our fish licenses and how that goes towards investing in our fisheries across Wisconsin. Max Wolter, you want to talk about what we can do to protect our fish at a state level?
Sure, yeah. And I guess I'll kind of talk generally about protecting all our fish, right?
Yeah.
I love the rare and the special stuff. We were fishing on the river the other day. My kid caught a moon eye. He was very excited.
Whoa.
There's so many species of fish in Wisconsin. Some of them are well known, like your bluegill and your walleye. Some of them are not well known. Some of them are truly rare. But all of those fish require habitat and protections for those habitats. And the more rare the species is, often it means they have very specific habitat requirements. And if those habitats are lost, if they're degraded, it's those rare and threatened species that are going to be the first ones to go. As far as, you know, federal versus state protections, all that stuff, it's difficult for me to speculate, what may or may not happen with those types of policies. But certainly Wisconsinites have a role to advocate for those types of things.
Yeah.
Throughout northern Wisconsin, private individuals have a huge role to play because most of the lakeshore is owned by private folks, right? So it's not federal land. It's not state land. It's somebody's cabin, and they're making the choices about what fish habitat's going to look like in front of their cabin or the stream running through their property. So individual landowners have a huge role to play, and then just everyday citizens advocating and saying, hey, you know, just because our legislators never heard of a shovel-nosed sturgeon, it doesn't mean they're not important.
Yeah, and a joy if you are able to get one on the line. Paul, you're the fisheries ecologist. A little bit more about how property owners in Wisconsin aid and abet our fish population in the state.
So let's talk about lakes first. As Max mentioned, they have a big, great stake. Often it's that portion of the water body that you step over when you get in your boat. It's that important edge, really. And so, you know, many of us are from a cultural European heritage where Germanic descent, where we need to clean everything up. That's, you know, we need our pastoral landscapes. And we brought these urban values to our lakes. Now, things are changing, attitudes are changing, but that effort of cleaning up your shoreline, making room for your two jet skis, your pontoon, and your fishing boat, in your two piers, there isn't much room left for messy, more natural habitat, tree falls, submersed aquatic plants, and emergent ones that grow, you know, like your rushes, your cattails, your white and yellow water lilies. So there isn't a lot of room left. And in our quest to find nirvana, we actually, in some degree, destroy nirvana to carve out our own space. Mm-hmm. And that's a challenge. And it's a challenge for all of us. And it's a hard thing. We like that habitat. Some of our waterfront property owners are doing very progressive things to restore that habitat, right, too. So I don't want to sound like a naysayer. Other property owners like that habitat, but they like to see it on the other side of the lake, okay? Not adjacent to their front. But they one of the things that all our waterfront property owners do enjoy is seeing their grandchildren enjoy water quality to swim,
yeah,
to jump off the pier, to be able to see more than 6 inches down in the water, to see the bottom in 4 or 5 feet, you know, to swim, to cast a bobber amongst the plants, to catch a bluegill, see a loon. Mm-hmm. Those are things, the common ground among all of us. And so protecting those things are about how we, as human behavior, what we choose to do and don't do on our waterfront properties. So the interesting thing on rivers and streams, that's not as big of a deal because of the unique nature of rivers and streams, they tend to flood. They push us back.
You can't clean them up.
It's harder.
Or if you it'll just come back, you know, again.
So lakes is, the residential riparian development's a bigger issue on lakes. And we have a lot of resources for folks that want to protect and restore nearshore habitat. And we have grant programs, the Healthy Lakes Program, that provides funds for everyone to restore these sites. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, they're simple practices. They're not complicated. The grant application process is simple. We have folks that lead projects like putting tree falls back in lakes, restoring bulrush beds, installing grain gardens, et cetera. So there's a lot of positive movement on this front, too. And yeah, we hope to build that momentum.
It's you hear the stories about fish kills or low fish populations, and climate changes and invasive species and extreme weathers. It sounds severe, but it also sounds like everybody can do a little bit and make it a lot better. Like, there is a role for each and every one of us to play in our fisheries across Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I would add, it's not just the nearshore property owners, the riparian property owners. Even if you live up higher in the watershed in a forest, if you're a farmer, if you're a forester, lakes, streams, they collect everything that falls on the land and filters through the land. You know, they're these downstream receptacles of everything that's happening. So all the things that we do as conservationists, whether it's best management practices on our agricultural fields or reforesting areas, good land use practices tend to give us better water quality downstream, whether that's in a stream, you know, 100 yards away, or a lake 20 miles, 30, 50, 100 miles. So all those things that we're doing on the landscape can help our fish out further down.
That's Alex Latska, fishery systems biologist based in Madison, who also keeps an eye on our muskie, walleye, trout, and panfish. Taking your questions for our panel of experts from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources at 1-800-642-1234, where we go to Christy next in Chippewa County. Christy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is a fascinating topic. Thank you so much. And Max, I loved you mentioning the moon-eye fish, because as a birder, I was curious if there's a amazing species that you love to see. I'm watching for a prosonatory this year. Two questions. So up here on Wasota, Chippewa County, occasionally this time of year, we'll see the DNR boat with the long arms. And I think I've seen them at night with bright lights, whatever. How are they doing the fish? Are they looking for certain species? Are the fish tagged? And then secondly, can someone just low-tech go out with like a bobber, and how do you know where to go and when to go? Just a general how to get into fishing question. Thanks.
Thank you, Christy. Max Walter, go ahead.
Ooh, those are great questions, Christy. Yeah. I love hearing somebody from Chippewa County. That's where I'm from. Spent a lot of time fishing on Lake Wasota, so that question really hits right where I want it to be. We use a couple different methods to survey fish, and I'll just stick with lakes for now. Rivers can get a little more complicated. We'll use what's called a fike net, which is basically a super, super oversized minnow trap, and that's very effective for catching certain species like walleye, muskie, crappie. But the thing that seems to capture everybody's imagination is the electrofishing, which is what it sounds like you saw out on Lake Wasota. That's the bright lights. It kind of looks like a UFO moving slowly around out on the lake. And what we're doing there is we have special boats that have a generator on board that's generating anywhere from 200 to 500 volts of electricity, putting that into the water through these droppers. And what that does is it temporarily immobilizes the fish so that the folks up on the boat can look into the water with those bright lights illuminating everything, and they can scoop those fish up. Okay, so we can go along the shoreline. Wow. We can catch the fish that are there, even if they're not hungry. That's the big difference between electrofishing and angling, is we can go and we can get them under most circumstances. And then, yeah, we're going to be looking at how many fish are we getting per mile of shoreline to give us a relative abundance. We may be tagging some of those fish, which she mentioned. We use tags that are the same as what you'd call the chip in your pets, right? Oh. If your dog has the chip.
Yeah.
Yeah. We put the chip in muskies and sturgeon, and then that gives that fish an identifying number for the rest of its life, so we can track where it goes and how fast it grows and things like that. And then we can estimate how old fish are. There's so much information that we actually need as fish managers to be effectively managing these populations, delivering good fishing, making sure our angling regulations work, following up on our stocking to make sure we're getting the most bang for our buck there. So these surveys are fascinating for people, and I'm glad that you're seeing us out there. And then the information that comes from them is super, super useful. And because I've been out doing a bunch of electrofishing surveys recently, Christy, I can tell you that if you want to catch some fish right now in the next couple weeks, and probably including free fishing weekend, I would focus on 5 feet of water or shallower, maybe 2 to 5 feet of water, and don't overthink it. A bobber and a worm in 2 to 5 feet of water near any piece of what we'd call structure, which could be a log in the water, it could be the outside edge of some aquatic plants, even a dock, is going to attract some fish. So 2 to 5 feet of water, and just hang that worm about a foot from the bottom, and you will probably catch something on Lake Wissota.
You're going to get a bite, Christy.
I believe in this.
That's Max Walter, fisheries biologist for Sawyer County, along with our other roundtable guests, experts, Alex Latska, fishery systems biologist based in Madison, and Paul Cunningham, fisheries ecologist, all from our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And there is also the Wisconsin Fishing Finder, which the DNR launched just last month. When we continue, we'll find out how we can all use this new tool. It is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and we've gone fishing on the Larry Mueller Show. It's the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and we've gone fishing with our panel of experts from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Alex Latska, fishery systems biologist based in Madison, Paul Cunningham, fisheries ecologist, and Max Walter, who is a fisheries biologist for Sawyer County. Along with you and your questions at 1-800-642-1234. But before we go any further, I want to find out more about the DNR's new Wisconsin Fish Finder, how it works, and how we can use it to find the best fish across Wisconsin. Who's the best to answer that? Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, so you called it the Fish Finder. The Fish Finder is a thing you put on your boat that kind of sends sonar signals and tells you where the fish are. Unfortunately, we can't do that for you. So this tool... This tool is the Fishing Finder. The intent is we want to help people figure out where they can go fishing, what to fish for, what the regulations are. We talked earlier about the contaminant advisories, things they might want to know about any given lake, and where they can launch their boat, where they can access from shore, all these things.
Yeah.
So it's just a map. It's an interactive map with a thing on the left where you can toggle on and off all these different data sets. So you zoom into the lake of your choice, whatever you're looking to learn about. You can turn on the lake regulations to see by species what the actual regulations and seasons are. You can turn on, there's a category called opportunities, so things that maybe influence your choice and why you want to fish there. So it has our stocking histories, what we've stocked in that lake for the last 15 or so years. It has lake classifications, which are kind of these large groupings about different habitat types. Those we kind of categorize into what you might expect. Is it a trophy musky potential water? Or is it an action bluegill water? So there's all sorts of groupings like that.
So it's a fishing finder. It's not going to find you the fish.
That's
It'll just find a place for you to and figure out where you'd like to drop your line. That makes a lot of sense. Let's go to Tom in the Rice Lake area for a question for you. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. My question is more of an opinion on sturgeon fishing. in Sawyer County and Russ County and over on the Flambeau River. Now, we've had a 60-inch limit for quite a few years. And what my opinion is, there's plenty of sturgeon, but not every sturgeon is going to get 60 inches. What I'd like to see is a slot size, say 42 to 48 inches. How does that go over?
Max, I will ask you how those limits are figured out and what that means for the population and whether or not we can do something about the sturgeon.
Sure. Yeah, and it's going to come back to two of our themes for this hour here, which is surveys and habitat, right? What information do we have on those populations? And then what does the habitat look like supporting them? We have some really healthy sturgeon populations in northwest Wisconsin. They're in rivers and connected lakes. We're talking probably specifically about the Chippewa and the Flambeau there with Tom. But a lot of species we are managing a little bit more on the conservative side, right? You know, we don't want to risk over harvest on populations. And so that's often how we wind up with the regulations we have. And then we'll continue to do surveys, continue to evaluate, look at how the regulations are working. Are they delivering what we want or not? And then sometimes we are able to, you know, loosen some things up, offer some more opportunities in certain circumstances. But, you know, that all flows from the surveys and what the fish are telling us.
Yeah. And so just to reiterate, why are you being overly cautious sometimes when it comes to these limits and sizes?
Sure. Yeah. Well, sturgeon in particular, such a fascinating species. They live for a very long time. It takes them a very long time to get to even the age where they're going to spawn. And they also have really specific habitat requirements. A lot of their habitat has been fragmented by dams. That's been a major disruption for sturgeon over the last few hundred years. So, you know, we tend to manage a species like that on a more conservative scale. So it's interesting, an interesting call. And, you know, it's certainly something that, you know, could be in the picture in the future. I guess I can't commit to anything right here and there, though.
Yeah, but you're always looking at it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we're just out doing a survey on the Chippewa River this year. We got a 71.5-inch sturgeon.
Whoa.
Very cool to see a fish that big. Yeah. 6 foot long.
We have a follow-up to the question earlier about the perch population in Lake Mendota and Madison. We'll go to Bob next. Bob, good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I just was curious on what you think about the size limit on northerns on Lake Mendota, for example. I believe it's, 40 or 42 inches. That's a darn big northern. No one's going to eat it, but I do believe, in my opinion, that would eat up a lot of perch in a day. What's your comments on that as far as the size limit on the northern pike on Lake Mendota?
Paul Cunningham, you see a connection there?
I see a connection to a trophy fishery for northern pike. Uh-huh. So in fisheries, we're about trying to create a portfolio of opportunities for a diversity of anglers across the state. And so there is no average angler. There are a group of anglers as well that enjoy catching, releasing, and seeing pike over 40 inches, just like our muskellunge.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are a lot of anglers that would like to harvest pike too. So we've set aside Lake Mendota as our trophy fishery of the Hera chain.
Okay.
And we have other fisheries in southern Wisconsin where there's no minimum length limit for northern pike and a 5-daily, or no minimum 2-daily, or a 26-inch minimum length limit and 2-daily. It's just that right now, Lake Mendota is our premier northern pike trophy fishery. The average size of those pike in Mendota excel and rival everything. The only comparable is probably Green Bay.
Do you think they are part of the reason for the lower perch population?
No.
Okay.
No. Energetically, they're fairly low density. They will eat perch.
Okay.
More so in the food web, walleye are the bigger predator of yellow perch in Lake Mendota. So, but a lot of the perch population levels, are influenced by a lot of different issues beyond those two species. So in the prioritization of who's eating who out there,
right?
It would be walleye eating yellow perch. Northern pike might be eating a walleye because those pike have a big gape and they can consume about 40% of their prey length. So if you figure a 40-inch northern pike can eat a 16-inch walleye.
Whoa. And Alex Latska, I would imagine that that fishing finder from our DNR might be able to help Bob out in finding a place to catch the northern that he'd like to eat.
Yeah. There's a couple tools you could use in there. If you turn on, if you look in the regulations layer, you can see which lakes have that 26-inch minimum or a 40-inch minimum. There's only a couple. So.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Bob, and the question as well, the comment as well. I want to go back to my fishing experience and how it's a bonding experience, Jerry Apps' fishing experience and how it's a generational experience and just how it goes beyond the actual tackle box, the line and the lure, how it goes to the tradition in Wisconsin. And Max Walter, I'll start with you and your 9-year-old's life list and how that plays into fishing in Wisconsin.
Sure. Yeah. So some people may be more familiar with the life list in the context of birding, right? You're going out, you want to see all these, you know, rare ones. You want to, you know, see a bird you've never seen before. My son and I are doing the same thing, and he's in kind of a privileged position, having a fish biologist as a father. I know where some cool fish are, but you still have to go catch them, right?
Right.
We still have to put in that time together to say, you know, our big catch last year was a hog sucker. So we went to this river that I knew had some hog suckers, and it took us all day to catch one of these, you know, stinking little hog suckers. It was about 11 inches long. It is the highlight of his summer, you know, catching this rare fish and be able to say he did it, and we did it together. And that's, you know, one of many different pathways that fishing can take you on.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's going to go out and fish for something rare and silly.
You're the guy that got the moon eyes. So.
We got a moon eye. We got a hog sucker. Yeah, we got to give some shout outs to these fish. We can't talk about walleye all day. But, you know, that's just our pathway to fishing. There's so many other pathways that people have, that families have, traditions that get passed down, the places you're going to go, the way you're going to fish, the stories you're going to tell.
Yes.
That's what it's all about, right? Is the one time that something crazy happened that you're going to tell for the next 3 generations, and the picture's going to be on the wall at the cabin or the resort or whatever.
Or it might not be a picture at all, but those fishing stories are legendary and passed down generation to generation. Paul Cunningham, you are now a grandfather. You've got a 3-year-old granddaughter. Tell us about your fishing experience.
Yeah, well, I think in fisheries, we are about creating the opportunities that make memories.
The experience.
Yes, and you know, we can manage the fish as best we can, but really the aspect of, now that I'm a grandpa, taking my three-year-old Winry out in Eau Claire,
mm-hmm.
Going shopping for first fishing tackle to Farm and Fleet Farm in Eau Claire, shopping for all her gear, you know, buying night crawlers. The idea of putting a night crawler in a hook and teaching her, exposing her to the outdoors. And our goal was, it was her third birthday, it was 3 blue eels on her third birthday. So to the caller on Lake Wissota, the goal was for Winry to be able to cast near the aquatic plants, not necessarily in the dense bed, but on the edge, cast out there, and three bluegills was it. It was, for a 3-year-old,
yep.
That was enough. And it was a memorable, when she sees me, she thinks about fishing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a memory for her. And
and for you too, obviously,
yeah.
Paul.
Yeah, I know. And I'm talking about it now on the Larry Mueller Show. So
not
there
just
you
talking
go.
About it.
That's
you're
how
beaming.
Important is these fishing experiences are to our public. We're just a cross section of anglers in the state, and we're no different.
I love those stories, and I thank you so much for your perspective and your work on behalf of the experiences that we all get out in Wisconsin's lakes and waterways. It's been a pleasurable hour, and I thank you all for joining me today. I also want to apologize to everybody who didn't get their questions in, but we'll just have to have our guest back. That was Paul Cunningham, you heard last, fisheries ecologist for the DNR in Madison, focused on the acquisition and stewardship of state properties, the management of habitat. Also heard from Max Walter, DNR fisheries biologist for Sawyer County based in Hayward. His focus is management of local fisheries, including the Chippewa Flowage and Namekagon River. And Alex Latska, Madison-based fisheries systems biologist with the Wisconsin DNR, all with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and I thank them for their knowledge, wisdom, and experiences out in Wisconsin's waterways. Safe fishing, everybody. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today. When we continue, we'll take a look at a new technology that's being used by our native tribes to find fresh fish on our Great Lakes. That's after the news here on the Larry Mueller Show.